As the oldest drag queen yet to compete on a reality TV show, Kitty Litter didn't know quite what to expect when she got on the second season of Camp Wanakiki, a YouTube series where drag queens compete deep in the woods for the title Queen of Camp at an actual summer camp in the middle of nowhere.
Being the ripe young age of 56, it's not the first time this seasoned drag queen has battled it out in the wilderness. After serving in the military for 10 years, Kitty Litter returned home to deal with the worst of the AIDS crisis in the late 80s and early 90s. And on top of all that, Kitty's been targeted by right-wing groups for being part of Storytime with Drag Queens at her local library in Austin, Texas.
Today, Kitty Litter, the sassy Southern gal from Camp Wanakiki, joins us to talk about her adventures on the show and about that one time she got arrested, and not just for stealing people's hearts. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Unlock a delicious world of podcasting magic and listen to thousands of amazing shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello.
Hi, Kitty Litter. It's Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Fillion from Feast of Fun. How are you?
Oh, howdy. I'm more excited to talk to y'all than a prick on a porcupine. Incidentally, do you know the difference between a porcupine and a concubine?
What is it?
One has the prick sticking out of it, and the other one, well, you know.
Ah.
Ay, Dios mío. Hey, I even have a sound effect for you. Kitty Litter, congratulations on being, the oldest drag queen contestant on any reality TV show program. And I don't mean that in a shady way. I really mean that in a deep, deep, genuine affection and appreciation.
Well, thank you very much for that. I'm actually super excited for the opportunity. To be honest with you, us old gals don't get a lot of chances like that. So when I got the call in March, the first thing I did was squeal like a teenage schoolgirl who got the prom date she wanted. Then I asked them what they were smoking out there because I just couldn't believe it. So yeah, I've been very blessed and lucky to have this opportunity.
Now, what made you want to audition for a reality TV show, unlike other ones where you guys go to Los Angeles and stay in air-conditioned studios and have lots of lights and camera and action? For Camp Wanakiki, you are out in the middle of nowhere with very little running water and electricity, and you're going like this. I'm a drag queen. Get me out of here.
Well, that's true, but the true tea is that RuPaul wasn't returning my calls. The Boulay brothers had a restraining order out on me, so this was kind of like my last chance. And to tell you the truth, when I saw season one of Camp Wanakiki, I was just so inspired by those campers, and what they were doing spoke to me. And I said, well, this is my wheelhouse. This is kind of where I'm at. That's my tribe right there. So I thought if I had a chance at any show, that would be the one.
Girl, you got to mute, turn off the grinder and the scruff. Is like they're putting you on blast right now. What's going on in the background?
There's bells ringing all over the place with the phone. I don't know whether it's message notifications or something crazy going on.
So you were cool with the idea of roughing it up and camping because you're a natural nature loving gal yourself.
Well, I am a naturist as well as the fact that I was in the military for 10 years. So I'm used to roughing it out of doors a little bit. And sometimes I like to rough it up indoors, too, but we won't get into my personal life just now.
Later in the podcast,
Where did you serve, or in what division did you serve, and how long?
I was in the Army for 10 years. Well, actually, you know, going back, I probably was in the Crimean Wars, too. I think I served with Florence Nightingale during that time. But more recently, I was in the United States Army, and I went to basic training in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Then I was stationed in Korea, Germany, Louisiana, back to Germany, and then I finally ended up landing here in Texas.
You're not from Texas originally?
I'm not. I'm actually from LA, but I've lived in the South so long I feel like I own it.
So this accent that you have, is that your day-to-day speaking voice?
Well, we will admit to a tiny bit of exaggeration where that goes. However, I think I owe a lot of it to the fact that I have a deep and abiding love for Southern women. I've been around them. I've known these people. Other people have known these people as well. I've had people message me and say, "Oh, honey, you're my grandma. You're my Aunt Verna. You're the lady that works at the Piggly Wiggly." They know these folks. And it wasn't, I want to just emphasize that when people talk about drag queens, sometimes they get the feeling that they're making fun of somebody or their culture, or they're mocking women in some way. For me, I have a deep and abiding respect for Southern women, and that's why my character went that route.
Well, you certainly can kiss our grits because you are channeling Polly Dean Holiday, the actress best known as Flo Castleberry on the TV sitcom Alice.
Absolutely adore her. Adore Greater Tuna. Adore, hell, the Steel Magnolias gals. You know, all damn, it's wonderful.
Yeah, for a lot of people that are familiar, Jason Williams and Joe Sears are a comedy duo that in the 80s and 90s did several very successful shows in Texas called The Greater Tuna, where they played all the characters of this wacky little town called Tuna. And that inspired a lot of drag queens at the time to think of drag as a form of theater.
Absolutely correct. And I adore those shows. I've seen most of them. So I really enjoyed the Greater Tunas. For me, my start in drag, not to bring the mood down, but I have to tell y'all that it was at the height of the AIDS epidemic. And at that time, I was very involved with the leather scene, and some friends of mine and I had went to a camp out, and we had thought it would be a funny idea to put on pink tutus and dance around to Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. Well, when we did it, I sat on what I thought was a sturdy picnic table, and it was actually a card table, and it buckled and fell out from under me. And people just rolled, and they said, "We love that. You should come and do that for us in like Dallas or San Antonio." And they were doing these charity benefits, and we thought, you know, we can actually do something good to help people with this. So we started a little drag troupe, and it was Miss Kitty and the boys. And after a little while, they kind of fell off of it. But I wanted to do my bit to raise money for people in need, because the government really wasn't very forthcoming with funds at that time. And we have friends who are dying, and they didn't even have burial expenses. And it was just it was a different time back then, because when we were doing drag, it was kind of more family-like, because it wasn't the emphasis on being famous. It was because we was trying to help our friends out.
Certainly, you know, reality television, RuPaul's Drag Race, and the internet's changed that. And a lot of drag queens are very much in it for the money and the fame and glory.
I don't shade them for that. I think it's wonderful to have ambition and goals. In fact, these new kids that are coming up, I'm just in admiration of all their business and marketing savvy. They know stuff that I'm still trying to catch up with or whatever.
Like what? What's an example of a savvy that you observe that you admire?
Well, when I got to camp, I was talking with some of the younger campers, and they was telling me all about the Instagrams and the Twitters and the tweets and the twats and all that. I didn't know from none of that stuff. I did know about Facebook a little bit, but I didn't know from marketing or you know, having numbers and this and that and the other was all new to this old gal. We used to do our stuff, you know, it was all smoke signals and drawing on cave walls and whatnot to get the word out. You know, things have come a long way since.
Well, yeah, if you were a drag queen and you didn't have a Kinko's frequent flyer card,
that was,
you know, you didn't have a career.
That was a thing back in the day, I'm telling you. And word of mouth, of course, you know, was big, but It has come a long ways. I do want to tell the young people out there, while I do admire that goal of wanting to be a superstar, that it, you know, for me, it took me 30 years just to get a modicum of success. And I like to tell people that I may not have been an overnight sensation, but I am sensational overnight. That being said, when y'all start out on your career, don't think it's going to happen overnight. It takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication, and maybe a certain percentage are going to make it, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't strive for those dreams or those goals. Absolutely, you should, but on the real, I don't think it's going to happen for everybody.
Well, I'll tell you this, we've talked to every drag queen from RuPaul to Bibi Zahara-Benet from A to Z. And, you know, they all share one thing in common is that they never feel like they ever get to make it. That drag is and art and entertainment is always a journey and a process. And if you don't like to be on the road, don't put on the wig.
That is some true tea right there, y'all, because it's literally, for me, it's just, I'm old as hell and trying to, you know, get to the gigs and trying to market merchandise and whatnot, you know, them stage coaches are hell on an old body. And when you're trying to get across the country or whatever to go to these shows and whatnot, it can be a little taxing, but...
Well, don't you get like senior discounts for like that stagecoach and stuff?
You know, I've gotten to the point where they're just going to have to put me in an urn to get me where I'm going or something. I don't know how it's all going to play out, but I do get some perks here and there for being an older gal.
Kitty Litter, how old are you?
In real life, I'm 56. Oh.
So just for the record, Charlie Hides was 52 when she came on Drag Race.
Okay,
so I did the research here for people like, isn't Charlie Hines the oldest one? I'm like, well, she certainly, you know, broke a rib and couldn't dance. Were people comparing you to Charlie Hines the week you were filming at Camp Wanakiki?
No, I will be honest. I think people had been comparing me, if it was to anybody in TV, it was probably Lassie, who was an animal actor from back in the day. So
the dog.
Yes, actually.
Why are they comparing you to Lassie?
Well, just because I think maybe that I look like a dog to them. I'm okay with that. I know I'm not the prettiest girl at the party, but as long as I get an invitation, that's just fine. No, I think that they maybe some folks discounted me because of my age or thought that I wouldn't do as well. But I had determination on my side, and I'm stubborn as hell. With age comes a certain amount of not wanting to let the world get you down and just trying to keep going. So I had that going for me.
So you have a lot of patience dealing with the ingenues.
I figure it this way. There's always going to be people that's going to second guess you, and there's going to be people that criticize you or don't give you your due. And all I can say to them is, bless your heart, and maybe that I can forgive them for just having a severe lack of taste and breeding, you know.
When did you first move to Austin, Texas?
Oh, Lord. This was back like in the late 80s, early 90s.
And so you were part of the explosion of cable television where I was there.
Probably so.
When a lot of drag queens were turning to cable access and starting their own TV shows, including me. Did you actually ever watch my TV show at the time?
I must admit I didn't. When I first moved to Austin, I couldn't afford a television set. We just had to like draw pictures.
Really?
We drew pictures on a book and would like flip it real fast so that we had something to watch at night. But we weren't doing TV at that time too much.
Where were you living in Austin?
I actually have been on the same street for ever and a day. It's kind of like Lamar, which used to be, if you're familiar with Austin, there's a big place called the Triangle Complex, which is about maybe 20 minutes from UT. And it used to all be a field out there. It was just, there was nothing. But since gentrification, it's done build up, and it's now we're considered Lamar Heights, which you change.
Ooh, fancy.
Oh, yeah. You throw up some paint and some flowers, and you can charge twice the rent, you know, and give it a cute name.
What's the cross street there for people like 35th or 6th?
I'm at Lamar 51st, so.
Oh, yeah, that's what, right? That's like a 10-minute walk from my mom's house.
Really?
You know, that area, it's close to Pease Park, which is one of the world's most famous gay cruising spots. And in the 90s, a lot of people used to get arrested at night because they were having sex in the men's bathrooms.
Ooh. Oh, my Lord.
Well, I'm sure a woman of your fine, refined sensibilities didn't get in any kind of that tomfoolery.
Oh, not at all. I mean, you know, for me, any displays of pubic affection would just be, I'm sorry, public affection would be terrible. You know, my days of lewd and lascivious behavior are far behind me. And just don't check those background records too carefully. But
they've been checked.
You know, I've done my swinging on the park swings before.
Well, since you brought it up, you got arrested one time.
I did.
First, not just stealing people's hearts.
Well, you know.
What was the crime that you got arrested for?
I was arrested for prostitution.
All right. A lot of cultures and histories is totally legit. Sex work is work.
Well, you know, we all got to earn a living some kind of way. But the true tea on it is that I was walking in Houston, Texas, in the Montrose, minding my own business, which is rare for me, admittedly, because I'm a nosy old thing. I was walking along, and this pickup truck drove up with a handsome man, and he said, "Do you need a ride?" I said, "Well, sure, of course." I jumped in the truck, and next thing you know, I was booked on charges. Y'all may not know this, but back in the day, that was a thing that happened, was that some people was set up. And, you know, I ain't trying to call out the police or whatever, but that's the real tea of what went down. And
police regularly, to this day, they'd be like, not only would they be, you know, trying to convince you to do sex work, that you would have sex with them, they wouldn't pay you, and they'd throw your ass in jail. And you're like, that would be your first time.
It was part of their kink.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, you know, if they had sent me a check later, I might have not been as upset about it, but I feel like that was all for nothing. But in the true thing, what happened after that was I had got a lawyer, and they had said that it was my word against the police, and if I chose to fight it, then I could possibly face jail time. So I took what they called a deferred adjudication, and so it didn't end up, you know, being a thing. And I thought nothing more of it. I was told it was going to be expunged from my records, and I thought
it wasn't.
And then years later, of course, I had my little meeting with the religious right, who decided to bring that up as part of their case against why I wasn't fit to read drag story time to children.
Oh, so you are very active in reading books to children as part of programs in schools and public libraries across the nation. They invite performers, including drag queens, to read to their kids because a lot of people, and it's all volunteer most of the time, and the right-wing conservatives who are always looking for a scapegoat for somebody to bully and target in order to get money to keep corrupt politicians in charge, they started targeting you.
It's true. Y'all, I had just come back from filming the Camp Wanakiki, and I had been doing drag story time at this point for about 2 years already, you know, at various places. And InfoWars, I don't know if you're familiar with them and that, Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Alex Jones and I used to be back-to-back on Austin Cable Television. His show came on right before mine.
Well, he is obsessed with my drag, y'all. I sent the poor man a wig, you know, in the mail because they ambushed my drag story time and had filmed me without my knowledge. And I had got home from the gig and somebody told me, "Get on your computer now, girl." And I did, and was just splayed all over InfoWars as, you know, this drag queen who read stories to kids. From there, they had suggested that I was, they really came for me, y'all. The religious right said that I was a satanic witch who who cooked babies in an oven, which is just ridiculous, y'all, because you know you got to bake them little critters at 360 degrees until they're brown and crispy. Y'all work in a cooking show. You know how silly that accusation was.
You gotta fry them. Everybody knows you fry babies. You don't bake them.
It's a fry baby. You know, with a little soy sauce. They're delicious.
Don't even tell me about your recipe for hush puppies.
You know, I love some pups, but that's a whole other issue.
So that must have been really like scary or really frustrating. You know, you come home from this week that was described by one of the contestants, Diana Fire. She's a white bearded queen from Portland. She said the series was a rare experience where drag queens went out of their way to make sure everyone was successful. And that was a phenomenal, rare feeling.
It was absolutely that. There was such a communal spirit there that I was surprised to find in a drag reality TV show. I do want to, not to get off talk, but congratulations to Tora Hyman, who won Queen of Camp.
Hey, spoiler alert.
Congratulations, Tora.
Not everybody knows
that. That's okay. It's been out for a while.
If you ain't looked at the internet and figured out what's going on by now, you never will. Tora's just a fantastic human being, an amazing drag queen, and she's just funny as hell. So I wish her all the success. I think she's going to be a great representative of the brand, and I think she's a great representative for the camp community.
Yes.
But every one of those campers tried to help each other out. So there was this feeling of family and a great spirit there. So I come back from that only to be attacked by these religious fanatics. And I'm like, first of all, if you go and thump the Bible, you should read it once in a while, because it says, love thy neighbor, you know, turn the other cheek, be kind, all that stuff is so all this hatred and going after folks, I just don't cotton to it at all. I'm like, you know, you got, what is it, judged, lest not you be judged or whatever. I just find that there's a lot of hypocrisy going on there. But I did, from that, I started receiving some death threats. People doxed my social media pages. They took things out of context. They went after friends of mine.
So they put your home address on for people to harm you in the physical world.
They really were really trying to go out of their way. It got so bad, I had to report it to not only the Austin Police Department, but to the FBI. I sent this stuff to the feds because I was like, this is enough. And what I need people to know out there is this isn't just unique to Austin. My understanding from 500 Drag Queens Strong and from other people that I know throughout the United States is this is going on all over the place, y'all. The right wing is finding ways to come and attack our community and attack marginalized individuals, not because that these people have done anything wrong, mind you. It's because they're different from them, and that's something they just can't cotton to.
Honey, I know how distressful it feels to be doxxed.
It was horrible. And I thought...
It's happened to us, too.
Has it?
Yeah, but it was the fans of RuPaul's Drag Race that did it.
I'm not
kidding either, but it really did happen.
What was the FBI's response? Like, did you actually get to talk to somebody? Did they respond to you?
Well, I can't really get into the whole details, but I will tell you that by and large, that the people that mattered were supportive and backed me up. At the end of the day, the right-wingers had went down to the Austin City Council with blown up pictures of me in my leather gear and whatnot as a guy. And were these great posters. They were actually very nice. I wanted to ask them if they would send me one because they were kind of cute. And it made the national news. But the city council heard what they had to say. And this was during Pride Week, mind you. And one of the city council members, I guess I can say his name, Jimmy Flanagan, who's an out and proud gay man, flapped a fan at them and said, "Sashay away. We have no time for your hate here in Austin." Aww. And the rest of the city council members turned around their nameplates and they all had rainbows on them. So they were like, "Okay, we done with y'all." Now, other smaller towns here in Texas have not been as kind when it comes to this. I have had some different cities that told me that maybe I'm not as welcome there. They don't like what I do. And that's fine. You know, I just hope they read to their own kids, y'all. Because when I hear how some of them speak, I think, oh, Lord, y'all need to pick up a book your damn selves. Come to one of my story times because y'all need some education. They, you know, it's just sad.
Mention the what?
They need to come to one of my
stories. Girl, it's like, this call's getting all crazy. It's like...
No, they need to come to one of my story times and get an edumacation because they ain't speaking.
Are you still doing the story time? Are you still involved?
I am. They did want to shut it down. They tried really hard with the libraries and whatnot, but it's still going on. We even have are in talks to secure a permanent space at one of the one of the theaters here in town is interested in hosting us once a month to do like a family friendly event and have that story time. And I just have to put it out there. The big argument they had was they said that adult entertainers were not appropriate to read to children. And I'm going, you know, you've got your Eddie Murphy, you've got your Bette Midler, all these people that have done movies and whatnot that were a bit racy, but they also done children's films and stuff. I know from appropriate, and I know what I might do in a nightclub isn't the same thing I'm going to do in front of a bunch of kids.
Why is it so important for drag queens to engage and read to children?
Well, for me, it could be pretty much any walk of life. I mean, you could switch it out for like a mayor or a maid or, well, who the hell ever. But the message that's supposed to come across through it all is that at the end of the day, we all the same. We got two arms, two legs, and it's about inclusivity and kindness and trying to bring everybody to the party. And my thing is, if there's one kid out there who feels a little bit different, and they hear one of these stories, maybe they'll think, you know, it's okay to be this way, or I'm all right being who I am. And if there's somebody out there who's judging them for that, maybe they'll think before they go to pick up a baseball bat and hit them over the head. Because I was almost beaten to death one time in Houston in a gay bashing. So, sure. So I, for me, it's very important that maybe somebody who might be thinking of trying to hurt somebody have a second thought about that and think, you know what, this is a person just like me at the end of the day. Let's all get along. And so I don't think that's such a bad message to put out to the world. And drag queens, who's better to, you know, talk about stuff and be colorful and entertaining than a drag queen or king?
Is talking about these stories or reflecting on this stuff, because it sounds really painful and very scary, does it bring back a lot of bad memories for you?
Well, when I started getting the death threats and whatnot, it brought all that stuff back from when I was attacked. I was leaving a gay bar in Houston many years ago and was beaten by a gang of people with sticks and kicked and onto the ground and whatnot. And luckily, I survived to tell the tale. At the time, sadly, even some of my own friends were like, well, you were drinking in a gay neighborhood. It was late at night. What'd you think was going to happen? And sometimes, for all y'all who've been through that out there, my heart goes out to you, because it's hard enough to, you know, live through something like that, let alone be judged for it. So, you know, coming back to the present, yeah, all that is triggering in a way. But the fact is, you know who's been the ones who haven't been filled with all that hatred and vitriol is the children. When I go read to them kids, the meanest thing that's said to me is, why do you have green hair? Or your necklace is so pretty and sparkly. One little gal said, I actually felt bad. She said, I wish my mama was as pretty as you. And I said, well, first of all, I've got an optometrist I'd like to refer you to, you darling child, but thank you. And then I looked at her stricken mother and just felt bad.
Well, let's talk about the Camp Wanakiki itself. There were a lot of challenges that you guys were placed to do that were related to summer camp. But in this season, they sort of drew attention to more to the aesthetics of camp and having the drag queens do things in an exaggerated manner or do a stand-up comedy routine. And that was very difficult for some contestants like Ivana, who went home in the comedy challenge. And the twins said that there was a mercy edit in the stand-up comedy routines for some of the girls.
That could be quite possibly in many of the cases. But I have to say that everybody has their own individual strengths. And actually, Ivana is just funny as hell. And the routine was actually funny as hell. Me being the kind of person that I am that finds humor in sometimes things that shouldn't be funny, even when she kept having to leave the stage to go and look at the lines, I was kind of there with her. In my heart, I was like, I was laughing, but I was laughing with her, not at her, if that makes any sense.
Sure, yeah.
I can see how for some people, there's going to be things that are harder for others. And I try not to judge that because I certainly had my share of challenges during that time, like climbing up on them damn high wires. Hell, I was glad I wore diapers that day because I about peed myself.
And I don't quite understand why the second episode they did an obstacle course again.
I can't speak to the hows and whys of it, but that's what they was. You know, they have assigned this thing called the NDA, which stands for, what is it?
Non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah, something like that. But the main questions I've been asked about Wanakiki, the first one was, did y'all get along and was there drama? And I was just like, well, you've got one cabin with 12 drag queens in it, only two bathrooms and 30 minutes to get ready. Do you think there was drama, y'all?
Well, certainly, I can imagine that for someone like Debbie Fox, it was disappointing to be sent home first.
Well, Debbie's absolutely beautiful and absolutely funny and talented. So hashtag justice for Debbie. Shout out to Debbie. I love you, girl. She's amazing. And being that she's so young and so talented, I think her career is only going to skyrocket from here. You know, I can actually see her going on.
What was her reaction when they told her she was going to be sent home?
Well, obviously for anybody, it's not going to be a easy thing or whatever. And you could tell that she was probably disappointed. I think because she was from Chicago, that she honestly felt like maybe that she had let some people down. And I just want to say to her right here and now that she didn't let anybody down. The looks that she brought with her, I wish she got to show them all because Sister has some really killer outfits. And I've seen her since then on social media, and I'm just like, honey, it looks like a painting. She's gorgeous.
Mm. It's got to suck to be the first one to go home, and then you know, it's not like you actually get to go home. You actually have to stick around for the whole week. So she's saying you guys get filmed and doing all sorts of stuff, and like, what was she doing? Just getting drunk in the cabin?
Well, through the magic of Hollywood, you know, we actually sent everybody home, and then they flew back for the finale. Wink, wink. But y'all know how these reality shows work. And all I'll say is I think that the people that didn't get to stay as long as they wanted were the first ones to step up and help other people when they needed the help. At Wanakiki, that was the thing. I can't speak to other shows, how they do, but I can tell you that these sisters and brother were all there for each other when it came time to help out somebody else. And that's, where else do you see that?
It's been really refreshing in Dragula and in Camp Wanakiki that we're starting to see cisgendered heterosexual women, trans men, trans women participating openly in these series. And it adds a lot of nuance and flavor to what's usually the boys club of RuPaul's Drag Race. I imagine that from your experience and from listeners and fans of Camp Wanakiki and Dragula, that it's just a matter of time before Drag Race starts, as Cherry Pie says, have a big tent with room for everyone.
Well, I hope that's the case. And it's not for me to judge how other folks do their shows or whatnot. But I will say that for the other two shows that you mentioned, Dragula and Wanakiki, I say hats off to them for inviting everybody to the party because it's a rainbow for a reason. There's all kinds of colors to it. And if you just pick one or two of them, the picture's just not going to be as pretty. I got to learn so much from, the young people that were there in the cast. I hadn't really had that much experience with drag kings. I know of them, but unfortunately, they don't always get their due in the community or whatever. And Boris was kind of my drinking and smoking buddy out there. You know, we only drink water at Camp Wanakiki. That's what we're running with. But Boris and I had several great chats about it. And I need people to know out there, if y'all don't think that the drag kings are real drag, then you better open your eyes because they coming with it. And they coming for you. So
a lot of people are not aware of the history of drag in Chicago and in the Midwest, that the tables were turned not even 15, 20 years ago.
Well, it was around 2001, 2002, 2003. It was like the drag kings here in town, like, ruled the city. Like, if you wanted to go out, and it was like you could see drag kings all the time, huge crowds would come up to see them perform. And then they just kind of like, it dissipated. That scene kind of dissipated. I mean, of course, there's fantastic drag kings around right now that are just doing phenomenal work.
But the scene was a juggernaut. Mm-hmm. It defined drag shows for everyone. It packed the houses. That's what the public wanted to see. And so I do want to draw attention to that reality, because I think sometimes people think about drag kings as this perpetually marginalized group of performers in respect to drag queens. But not too recently, it was the other way around, and it could flip again. So be nice to those drag kings, because mm-hmm. they may be your king next year.
You know,
absolutely. And, you know, my whole thing is, and I don't know if y'all noticed, but I am on the board for the Austin International Drag Festival. And I think our thing has always been to be respectful of all forms of drag, because all drag is valid. And when I hear people say that, oh, cisgender women aren't real drag, or this isn't real drag, or you know, art house queens aren't real drag, or what have you, I'm just like, that's ridiculous, y'all. If you want to do drag, if you got it in your heart, you want to do the work and put on your makeup and bind or tuck or whatever it is that you have to do, and put on a performance, then you doing drag, and it doesn't matter who or what you are.
But just follow one rule.
Which is?
Don't burn the meat, Claire, apparently. I mean, Claire apparently is the first trans male drag queen, working hard to represent her people there. And she just had so much fun in the burger challenge, she burnt her burger.
Aww.
And, well. and she feels that's what got her sent home.
Well, Hamburger Mary's takes their burgers very seriously.
They really do, y'all. And I actually thought that my burger was going to be quite cute or whatever. But I think Ruthie's comment to me was, stay out of the kitchen, kitty. Which is fine, because I have other rooms of the house where I do excel. So if it doesn't happen to be the kitchen, it's somewhere else. Take note, oh, Ruthie.
Do you have like a dungeon and stuff?
Yes, something like that. I think there's a sling which is currently being used for a dress hanger, unfortunately, but
as a laundry basket,
right?
That's like like Fausto's inversion table in the back of the house. There's towels drying on it right now.
Well, I hurt my back on the inversion table, and I was like, now I'm kind of like scared to get back on the horse.
Well, you know, it's like a bicycle once you get on.
Do you stay in touch with a lot of the contestants? Who are you closest to?
We do have our own little private chat group that we communicate on or whatnot. And then we have our one for our promo stuff, which is a little more formalized. But yeah, I chat with them now and then, and they're all doing quite well. After the show, then, you know, now comes the time we're all going to be getting together again at Drag Fest, the most of us. And I've even got to meet some of the season one girls. Pagan Holidays just moved down here to San Antonio, y'all. And
oh, wow. Where was she? She was in like Wisconsin or something, right?
Uh-huh.
She was in Madison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting away from that Wisconsin winters.
Yeah, I got to meet, you know, I was filming for most part the season one. And I got to see a lot of the queens, and they seemed very warm and friendly and very enthusiastic about the process. But there was a little bit of, you know, frustration in the fact that it is a reality TV show that sends people home. It is a grassroots project, and it doesn't have the funding that other developed programs have. And I think for the contestants, that was a hard thing to reconcile with.
Well, it probably was, and I will tell you that I did have a couple of the season one folks that told me, they said, well, y'all were living in luxury compared to what we had, because you had an actual stage, and you had, you know, this and that and the other. And I was like, well, you know, that's just how it happened to fall out or whatever. But I have big respect for them for setting the ground for us or whatever, because they're all amazing entertainers and very nice people from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
except for the one.
They don't consider me one of the Camp Waikiki girls from season one.
Well, because you were a bear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, true tea, I was kind of hoping that you was going to walk out of the woods on the cooking challenge. But I will say that the baking bear, or the bare naked chef, was a nice
substitute.
Did you guys get to see him naked?
We did. And yeah. bless his heart. I mean, I shouldn't tell tales out of school, but I'm going to tell you this. It was cold as hell out there, y'all, and it was May. We thought it was going to be like warm summer days, and I dressed accordingly. Apparently, he undressed accordingly as well. And, you know, if he had any shortcomings, they weren't visible that day. That was a whole lot of deliciousness going on there. And when you out in the woods with, you know, a bunch of drag queens for days and days on end, it's nice to see something furry coming down the trail.
Mm-hmm.
I was all about it. I have to tell y'all that there was one morning at breakfast, our poor groundskeeper came in for the camp, and the poor man was a senior, so I think maybe he was 80th a day, and I think maybe I have more teeth on my comb than he had in his head. And he comes shuffling in there just a tired, and I looked over, and I heard this voice say, that man is fine. Damn, that could be my baby daddy. And then I was surprised to hear that it was coming out of my mouth, that voice. And I was just like, oh, hell, what am I doing here? You know, he might have been a tired senior citizen trying to earn a living. But that day, he was, what's that kid from that singing group?
Donny
Justin
Osmond.
Timberlake.
Well, more current.
Nick Jonas.
There you go. Nick Jonas. That day, he was Nick Jonas.
Mm.
How exciting.
Well, you know, it's like when you're out in the woods and you're lonely and all you see are these men dressed as women or women dressed as men. Whatever. Yeah, you get real horny and, you know, it's going to look good.
I remember that the farmhand from the first season, everybody was trying to jump his bones and he's like, I do not swing that way.
Yeah, the poor construction people that were out there working on the camp were at our mercy. And I couldn't figure out why the camera crew was all walking with their backs. You know, they were always walking backward when they were filming us. And I figured they thought if they turned around that we'd descend upon them like a pack of wild hyenas. So, and now I understand what was going on at that time.
Kitty, congratulations on Camp Waikiki and congratulations on being part of the top queens of second season two.
Thank you so much. It's just been a real experience. I do want to mention to y'all that we do have some upcoming projects. I think that we're going to do like a YouTube kind of thing. And it's going to be called The Litter Box, B-O-X-X-X.
And I'm sure it won't be shitty.
It might be non-clumping. I don't know. My friend Hexadolce and I are doing it. But right now you can go to litterbox.com, and we're supposed to have the site up in a couple weeks or whatever. So that'll be something that we've got in the works or whatever. Plus, I'm talking about maybe doing a Christmas musical with some folks, and I've got trying to grab those gigs. So if anybody's out there looking for bookings and need a sexy senior citizen to spicy up their holidays, give me a shout. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to be in Austin, Texas to celebrate Glitter Day. January. The second Saturday in January, right?
We'll be arriving in Austin, Texas. I think, what is it?
August, the 6th.
The 6th, we arrive for a little Christmas, and then we're going to stay for the next week.
And on Saturday, January the 11th, mm-hmm. Is the second Saturday in around the world. You can celebrate Glitter Day, a queer LGBTQ fantastic holiday for the sparkly magic in everyone. And you can do anything you want to that day, as long as it's legal.
But, I mean,
or you don't get caught.
Well, I think that day's probably going to last for a long time because glitter's like the herpes of the craft world, y'all. It just never goes away. Once you get it, you stuck with it.
Well, you'd be surprised. A lot of the listeners of the show, we came up with this idea a long time ago, early days in the podcast, and people every year do celebrate Glitter Day, the second Saturday in January, and they light up a menorah, kind of like Kwanzaa, but it's rainbow candles. And I'll let you figure out what to do with the black candle.
See, that is super cute, but they never let me near open flames anymore because my alcohol blood content is so high that I could spontaneously combust.
Well, you stay safe, girl. Keep always a bucket of water nearby.
That damn stay Dorothy. Hydrated. That damn Dorothy. She got my sister, but she ain't getting me. But I'm excited about this holiday, y'all. I never heard of such and y'all have to call me when you come to town, and we'll hang out. Get into some glitter with y'all.
Well, you know, you're also friends with one of my dear friends, Louisiana Purchase. Wheezy, we call her.
Oh, I absolutely adore her. I've been going to some of the viewing parties, and I guess I won't give any spoilers. Hell.
Well, she's on Dragula on the third season now.
Yeah, third season. Well, not anymore.
No. Well, okay. Well, I mean, you went there, so now we can talk about it. But for me, the thing that was so cool was A, that we got to compare notes, and B, the fact that when she was sharing her stories on Dragula, y'all, she was talking about not getting her start until later in life, and that was relatable to me because the 10 years that I was in the military, I was more so far in the closet that I could see Narnia, y'all. So when I came out, I was already in later years. So when I heard her talk about her experience with that, it was so relatable. And the fact that she was very nurturing to the other contestants, it really touched me because I was like, it spoke well of her. It spoke well of Austin and Texas in general, you know, or just people that you can be there for somebody else and say you can make it. And I thought she was just a great example. Not to mention that her drag and her burlesque. And if I could dance like that, she's amazing.
Yeah, she's got the devil inside her. She can bend over backwards and suck her own dick.
Well, that's not all she's had inside her, but it's not my story to tell y'all.
If we were to do an exorcism, what would come out of her?
Oh, probably Jimmy Hoffa, the Lindbergh baby. What else has been missing? I'll take Amelia Earhart, hell. There's all kinds of stuff going on up in there.
I feel bad that she didn't make it all the way to the end, but you know, she had a real good run. I think people really have grown to love her and to see her as an amazing drag queen performer. And you know, so she wore a little bodysuit, whatever, you know.
You're saying because of the critique. The critique of the devil outfit. Yeah. I think that was they were just fishing for something because at that point it was like they had to choose three. And, you know, fortuitously, and I guess this is a spoiler, if you haven't watched the episode, she drops the prop and it disappears in this dark, cluttered room. So they had to send her home because there was no way to film her grabbing the magic roll of paper that got her to the next round. That was like, I think they didn't intend for her to go home, but they had to send her home.
Wow, see, the magic of Hollywood, y'all. Sometimes it works against you. But I am absolutely proud of her. I think she would have been, she was a fierce contender. She would have been a great winner. But I think she did her thing, and she's not going to be hurting now. I think they start off, you know, as soon as they're announced as being on that show, then they already have, like, jillions of fans everywhere. So she's not going to be hurting for bookings or whatnot. And she's a wonderful human being and an amazing friend. So I'm happy for her success.
And she throws wild parties, honey.
Oh, well, I've heard, you know. I've
been to a few of them.
They won't give me a pass from the nursing home to go. As soon as I mention her name, they say, no, you're not going to that. You know, your pacemaker can't take all that excitement. But I've heard stories about them.
Girl, I know you bribe the nurses to let you out.
I do. I give it a little something here and there. But I'm not bitter about Louisiana. I have to admit, when I first, the Camp Wanakiki thing happened, I would have people come up to me and they said, oh, we heard that you're that drag queen from Austin who's in a reality TV show. And I said, yes, I am. And they said, oh, good. We love Dracula. And I was like, no, that would be Louisiana Purchase.
And they were like, you were scary good.
Right? I'm like, that was somebody else, honey. I'm on Wanakiki.
Do you think you could have been on Dracula? I mean, that show, they electrocute you, they shoot you, they stab you, they tattooed you.
Well, that's just another Saturday night at Miss Kitty's house, y'all. So it's
Miss Kitty.
The dungeon's a thing. It's, you know.
Are you named after Miss Kitty from Gunsmoke?
I don't even know if I can say this on y'all's show. The religious right looked this up on Urban Dictionary, I think it's called, and said that kitty litter was a term for when a man urinates into a woman's vagina during intercourse to make it moist or whatever. And they said that's why she chose that name. And I said, no, it wasn't. It was because my beloved cat Boots died right when we were trying to think of a drag name. And I was taking out the cat, the kitty litter, to the trash. And I was like, kitty litter, Boots, okay, we're going with kitty litter. And at the time, I thought it was the most imaginative, creative name on the planet, not realizing that there was about 200 other kitty litters out there in the world. And then I said, well, to distinguish myself, I'll be Miss Kitty Litter ATX because, you know, lawsuits and such.
Mm-hmm. When Sharon Needles came along, she said every state has a governor, every state has a Sharon Needles.
Wow. And sometimes those governors are Sharon Needles, so it's like a dual thing going on. At least that would explain some of their behaviors, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you, and I do like seeing drag queens with a lot of history and a lot of knowledge of our history and who are very active in various communities, not just drag, to be on these contests. So congratulations to Sherry and Apple Pie Brown Betty. But Apple Brown Betty and Cherry Pie for booking you and inviting you to be the next queen of camp.
I absolutely thank them immensely. I owe the Sugar Baker twins and Ruthie Keister a huge debt of gratitude, as well as Hamburger Mary's, y'all. Don't forget about Hamburger Mary's now.
For sponsor the of Cooking with Drag Queens.
Right? That's it.
Speaking of which, we have a new episode with the loser from season one, Muffy Fishbasket, is available now.
You can
watch it at patreon.com/feastoffun. You can watch the rough edits.
I'm going to come and see that because I live for her.
She's great. And we basically recreated one of the chicken Kiev meals that we were fed at the first night at Camp Wanakiki.
Oh, Lord. See, we ate good out there, y'all. I'm going to say, but somebody told me that Dracula, the food was not the tea.
Well, yeah, they give you like raw brains in Dracula, right?
Right, right.
Well, the thing about it is it's hard to do fast food when you're literally in the middle of nowhere. So in some ways that, you know, they're kind of forced to either starve you to death or feed you.
Yes. Yes. And I think in our case, we were just lucky that we had a great chef out there that prepared meals. So that was a good
that's
thing.
That's wonderful.
Yes. And I hope y'all will name a food after me one of these days, you know.
You know, I'll make a kitty litter brownie casserole.
I think there's some kind of kitty litter something.
Yeah, so when you take Oreo cookies and you mix them with vanilla cookies or something as a cake topper, they usually call that a kitty litter cake.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm down for that.
And then you take a shit in it.
And they take like a brownie, like chocolate, sweet, to make it look like shit. It's really disturbing and horrible, but it tastes really good.
Well, I don't know. Maybe a pineapple pussy surprise would be more appetizing. I don't know.
Well, honey, I know that your upside down has a lot of fruit in it, and it's all roasted. Kitty Litter, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank y'all for having me.
Of course, anytime. We'll hope to see you in Texas.
Yes, indeed. Come on out and experience some of our Southern hospitality. I mean hospitality.
Kiss my grits.
Miss Kitty Litter lives in Austin, Texas.
You can follow her on social media, Instagram, Miss_Kitty_Litter_ATX. That stands for Austin, Texas. And on Twitter, she is ATX Miss, because she got that dyslexia going from all the years of huffing hairspray.
What a delightful person.
What a, you know, that is gay sensibility of, you know, being a warrior going through the AIDS crisis, being a warrior and literally by serving in the military as a closeted gay person, which we kind of really talk about, but and just being this drag queen who's attacked by religious conservatives and fundamentalists in Texas. And she has this really beautiful, very funny way of looking at the world. And that's part of what we celebrate here on Feast of Fun.
And keeps doing what she's doing. She's just like, screw you haters. I'm going to read to these kids and they're going to hear me.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, she's not scared of some people on social media saying, like, you know, she didn't blend her contours enough. And, you know, actually, from all the contestants on the second season of Camp Wanakiki, I thought her looks are definitely aligned very well with what they were looking for.
The camp aesthetic.
The camp aesthetic, that outrageous, the her looks were very unique, but they also seemed to fit that drag campy desire, and I just loved it. I loved everything that she did, and she was definitely an interesting person. You can watch Camp Wanakiki on YouTube, youtube.com/Camp Wanakiki. And if you don't know how to spell it, go
to the website.
Go to a library.
And get read to by a drag queen.
Yeah.
I hope she's performing in Austin when we're down there. I love the drag down there. It's great to see.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully maybe I'll be performing there
maybe
too.
Maybe they'll get you in a gig. I want to remind folks, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. We are in our 15th season here at Feast of Fun. And we're here because you and people just like you made it happen, and we can continue making it happen well into the future if you support the podcast.
And another way to support the podcast is go to patreon.com/feastoffun, where you can see future episodes of Cooking with Drag Queens before anybody else does. patreon.com/feastoffun, recipes, photos, secret podcasts, and more. Hey, we want to hear your voice and your thoughts. Let us know what you thought about the show, or any questions or ideas, topics of conversation. Ask us a question. Ask us anything. Record it, your voice locally, and email it to us at mail@feastoffun.com. And we like it. We'll play it on the show and react to it. And if we don't like it, we'll put it in our... We'll listen to it anyways.
Yeah, we'll listen to all submissions.
But we'll, you know, be like, why'd you say something so mean?
Goodbye, everyone, and thank you so much for listening.
Take care.
Bye-bye.